This is Startup Nation Radio, the show to learn about how to start and grow your own business.
You got to follow your own compass. You got to execute on what you really believe in.
Well, the principles of entrepreneurship, I think, are universal.
Entrepreneurs benefit from learning from each other.
Hey, Rich, you're calling in from The Nation. What do you have for us this week?
Well, first of all, The Nation is alive and well. Entrepreneurs are jamming it.
The time is now.
The real question is, do you have the confidence, the resources, and the support?
It's always a good time to get into business.
It's time for Startup Nation with Jeff Sloan.
All right, it is indeed time for Startup Nation Radio. Great show ahead today. Listen, we love hearing stories of successful entrepreneurs, those who are out there doing it, doing the hard work, being creative, putting the energy in, putting themselves at risk and reaping the rewards. But we're going to have two great stories today of entrepreneurs who are making it work for them. Listen, you can do it too. Tune into this edition of Startup Nation Radio. Hear their stories, pick up a few tips and tricks of the trade, and let's put them to work and make some dreams come true to create businesses of your own. Right here on Startup Nation Radio. Stick with us. Great show ahead.
You're listening to Startup Nation Radio on News Talk 760 WJR. Here's Jeff Sloan.
Okay, great show ahead. Listen, we're going to feature a couple of entrepreneurs who just won in their categories in the Homebased 100, the Startup Nation Homebased 100 contest, where we acknowledge and credit entrepreneurs who are started in their homes, maybe still working out of their homes. A lot of people around this country. You know, we always hear the stories in the front page news on the Wall Street Journal and all the rest about the big stories, but the American economy is driven by sole proprietors, individual entrepreneurs who go out there, they have a dream, they make it happen. Many of those, if not most of those, start out of the home. And Startup Nation does an annual contest where we feature winners in various categories. The winners are selected by the community. So it's a popular vote. You're voted amongst your peers to determine who they think is the best story in each of the categories. And we've got two great winners on the show today. Now, in addition to recognizing them and featuring them and their stories on the show today, because they're winners, we're gonna talk to them. We're gonna press some questions to them that try to draw out some tips and tricks and how they overcame challenges that you can put to work yourself to create a success story of your own. And hey, who knows? Maybe you'll be next year's winner in one of these categories on the Homebase 100. All right, before we get into it, I want to call out to our sponsors, Walsh College, Comerica Bank, and Pappas Financial. Now, Pappas Financial has been a trusted advisor to business owners for over 40 years. They guide entrepreneurs on strategies that protect their businesses and personal assets, implement company benefit solutions, and provide a roadmap for businesses to set their succession plans and investment strategies. Get started right and stay on track. To help you do just that, get Pappas Financial on your side. Reach out to them at 248-539-8292 and tell them Startup Nation sent you. Well, speaking of Pappas Financial, our great friend Norm Pappas is on the show often now, frequently. He's a great co-host of the radio show. He's on the road today, on business, out of town. So he won't be with us on the show today, but he'll be back again next week, and we look forward to that. Okay, so let's dive right into it. So this Homebased 100 contest, as I said, we've the peers in the community voted for the winners. We've got two great stories to focus on today. The first of which is a story. You know, what I love about this first story is that, again, these are not big-time high-tech companies. These aren't front-page Wall Street Journal, biotech companies, the next. And those are all great companies, too, and certainly worthy. But the companies we're going to be featuring today are companies that are, come from people just like us, pushing everyday consumer products, in some cases services in the other, and making it work. And so our first guest, Scott Zollkind, is doing just that. He's created a new hot sauce. There's got to be 10,000 hot sauces out there, and his is emerging as a unique product that's really catching on, and he's making it work. Scott, welcome to Startup Nation.
Hey, thanks very much.
It's great to have you on the show. So we always like to hear first, how and why and where, what's the genesis of this idea? I mean, here you are in the hot sauce business. Did you ever know 5 years ago that that'd be the business you were pursuing? I mean, how did this happen? How do you go from being what you're doing before to then being in business selling a new hot sauce?
Well, it was kind of a long, windy path. I was a horticulture guy in school, and then I got into IT work because when in Rome, I live in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay, a lot of IT work. I had some skill in technology. I transitioned from there to project management because I've always had some skill there as well. Did some training, went back to school, took some business and project management classes, and then transitioned over to healthcare project management. I did that for the better part of 12 years. And while I was doing that, I've always loved spicy food ever since I was a little kid, and it was a very stressful gig. And I would go home on the weekends, and my shoulders would be up to my ears with stress. And to unwind, I would be playing with peppers in my kitchen and have garlic on the grill and peppers in a smoker and stuff in a pot. When you're chopping ingredients and prepping ingredients and cooking ingredients, you don't really have time to think of anything else. So it was a way to find kind of my zen and unwind on the weekend. And after about 8 or 9 years, I got enough positive feedback that I thought, well, maybe I can do something with this, and decided to kind of take the plunge. Entered a competition right after I launched my company. I was working one farmer's market a week, and I won a first place in Texas with one of my sauces. And I thought, well, geez, if I'm good enough to do it there,
I was going
to
say,
I can take it a little bigger.
Yeah.
And shortly thereafter, it kind of came to me while on vacation in Hawaii, an epiphany that why am I doing the thing that stresses me out, that forces me to unwind with a hobby, instead of doing the thing that I love to do and just knocking off the thing that stresses me out? So that's exactly what I did.
It's my day job,
and I do lots of farmers markets and selling stores and all over the place.
Incredible. Now, it's amazing, you know, when you do something you love, like you are, it's amazing. It's easy to get up in the morning and really push hard and go for it, isn't it?
It is. You know, they say when you do what you love, it doesn't feel like work. And whoever said that was a liar, because it does feel a lot like work every day. But it's work that I don't mind doing. I don't mind that I work 15 hours a day now. I don't mind that I can't sit down and not think about my job, because I enjoy my job and I enjoy the challenge of my job. I enjoy creating new recipes. I enjoy marketing those recipes. There are so many aspects to what I do, whether it's doing directly with the public or doing with wholesale, or dealing with web sales or customer service. Every one of them is a new challenge, and every one I embrace because it's what I do and it's what I love to do.
That's great. And listen, one thing I drew out of some of your commentary is that you pursued something that you're passionate about. It was your zen, as you put it. And that's the first tip I want our entrepreneurs to pick up on out there. You know, everyone's always looking for the next revolution, the next big idea. It doesn't have to be. You can even do it in hot sauce. Imagine that, with all the competition there is out there. If you have a passion for it and you're really into it, and you get up in the morning and you work hard, and certainly if you work smart, and that's what we're here to do at Startup Nation, to help you do just that, listen, you can make it work. Now, Scott, stick with us. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, I want to hear how, you know, some of the steps you took to get this thing ramped up and get it going to the success that it is today. So stick with us, everybody. We're going to hear from Scott after the break, and we're going to hear how he made this happen and how he made his dream of having a business of his own a reality. Stick with us.
Welcome back to Startup Nation on WJR. Here's Jeff Sloan.
Okay, welcome back. Today's show brought to you by Walsh College, Comerica Bank, and Pappas Financial. Now, we're talking to Scott Zollkind of Lucky Dog Hot Sauce. Boy, what a lucky dog. Home-based 100 champion and the highest vote-getter of the whole contest, Scott.
Great. Right on, right on.
Right on is right. Now, we're catching you, you know, here in classic entrepreneurial style. We're catching you where? Where are you right now?
I'm standing about 30 feet from my booth at the Hayward Farmers Market in Hayward, California, right outside of City Hall. One of five a week that I do during the off season, which is October through April, and then from May till the end of September, I do eight a week. I do two a days on Wednesday and Thursday, and I pick up a Friday market. So
unbelievable!
Paying a girl lunch to watch my stand while I'm out here talking to you people.
Incredible! And thanks for taking the time to share it with us. I mean, there it is, the life of an entrepreneur. Saturday afternoon, you're at a farmer's market hawking your wares, and I love it. All right. Now, listen, Scott, it's one thing to have a great idea and to dedicate yourself to pursuing it. In this case, for you, it was a new type of hot sauce. But there's a lot that goes into this to make, you know, to take it from that idea and that point of dedication where I'm going to pursue this, I'm going to do this, to actually making it all go. For you, what were some of the early steps? So you said to yourself, I'm going to create a new type of hot sauce. I mean, obviously, I can think of some things. You had to have a brand. You had to have a recipe that was unique. Let's start with that. I mean, let's talk about the recipe first. I mean, you got to have a unique product, right? It's got to be a quality product. What did you do to create a product that could stand the test of competition in a very competitive field?
You know, it was interesting. I took kind of a selfish approach. I was never intending to make a business out of it. As I said, it was a hobby. It was a labor of love. I did it to unwind. It was a lot of fun. I also did something that I don't normally do, which is I didn't research recipes at all. I didn't look to find somebody else's recipe. I'm a little bit of a musician. I play guitar. If I go learn somebody else's song, that's great. I know how to play their song, but I don't make an original song. So I looked up food safety and how to pasteurize and how to hot pack and how to avoid making people sick with botulism, things like that. And then I sort of worked my recipes around ingredients and flavor profiles I loved, like roasted peppers and roasted garlic and different things that I couldn't find in a prepackaged hot sauce in the market. I was trying to fill a gap strictly for selfish reasons. I wanted to eat it on my own food. So I looked for recipes and combinations, or to put recipes together with combinations of flavors that I really loved. I made some horrific sauces the first couple of years. It went from what the hell is that to, hey, that's not bad, to, hey, can I get some more of that? And then as the feedback got stronger and stronger, I mean, this is a 6-7 year hobby, a little over 7 years. And so when I finally decided to make it into something that I could sell and market it, there's a lot of regulatory stuff involved.
Sure.
It's a hot pack certified shelf stable product. It needs government clearance. You need FDA. You need, you know, your labels have to be, everything has to be compliant. So by the time I got to that stage, now it's just a matter of checking off a list of things too, because I already had a pretty good stable of recipes. And then it was figuring out which of my couple hundred recipes were the most compatible with a 300-gallon batch as opposed to a 1-gallon stovetop hobby batch.
Sure.
And, then from there...
Just real quickly, on the recipe, kind of the breakout thing for you is instead of just using dry powders that give the chili... I mean, you wanted this thing to really have flavor. And so you included real roasted peppers. And apparently, there's not a lot of other or no other sauces that are doing that. Is that right?
There's a couple. Since I've gotten into this, I've found a lot of really good connections in the industry. For such a competitive industry with so many people in it, there really is a lot of camaraderie. We're all in it for the most part because we love hot sauce. So there's a lot of trading. I have about 150 different kinds of sauce in my pantry and another, you know, couple hundred in my fridge. It's getting to the point where Hoarders is going to do a special episode on my refrigerator.
Yeah.
It's getting a little scary.
Yeah. And that's a cool thing, by the way, that I want to mention about your audience or your potential market for this. It's an amazing thing, but you know, you take ketchup, for example. I mean, that's just a commodity. I mean, that's everywhere. I mean, there might be some subtle differences in ketchups, but the reality is I wouldn't say that people are passionate about it. Incredibly, though, peppers and hot sauce, I mean, it is. It's like a community of people who are really passionate about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
And then when it came down to making it and going pro with it, that was really the most difficult part of the business. And that I totally attribute it to the moderate success I've had to the project management background. I did a SWOT analysis on a few different things. Where does it make the most sense to invest my money? I've only got a little bit of seed money to start this business. I cashed out everything I had and threw it into this. And if I've only got so many bullets in the gun, I want to make sure I hit a target. And so I did an analysis on whether it made more sense to rent a kitchen space and purchase equipment. You need packaging equipment. You need to get a kettle. You need to be able to hot pack. You need to be able to invert and have sterile bottles and do labels and put lot ID. And when it came down to it, the amount of money I would have had to invest in the equipment for this, and then the amount of time that I would have had to spend standing in a commercial kitchen making my own products by hand, every bottle, at this point, here we are 3 years later, I would never be able to keep up with the demand making it myself, and I would be out of business already.
Sure.
So I researched co-packers, production packagers, typically people who have their own successful product line who reinvest their profits into a $5, $10, $12 million kitchen, and then they figure out, well, my kitchen's dormant, you know, 30% of the year, what do I do with it? And they make other people's products with or for them. And so I was fortunate enough that pretty close to me, about an hour away in Sonoma, there's a phenomenal production facility who allows me to go in, work with them on my recipes, source my ingredients where I want to. And by using them, it changes the dynamic a little. The batch sizes get bigger because you're using a commercial packager who insists on minimum batch sizes.
Yep.
So I have to produce more sauce. I have to spend more money on it. But I can also get some of their economies of scale on ingredients. One of my most expensive ingredients is roasted garlic. It's in half my sauces. They make pasta sauce for a living. They get lots of roasted garlic. When they buy it by the truckload, I get their price on it. So it actually worked out to a point where when it all came down to the math, it's a little bit cheaper to make it with the commercial kitchen than it would have been to do it on my own.
Sure.
And now I'm freed up to go out and sell my sauce. Nobody pays me to stand in a kitchen and stir a kettle and bottle sauce by hand. That's all money lost.
But all right.
Hustling sauce, I can actually sell it.
Right, exactly. You need to be the guy out in front. You need to be the guy that's marketing it, promoting it, pushing it down the
Absolutely.
Pipeline.
Absolutely.
Did you on your brand, Lucky Dog hot sauce. Did you file any trademark protection or pursue IP in any way, intellectual property?
Absolutely. Lucky Dog Hot Sauce is a trademark, registered trademark. Food's Best Friend is also a registered trademark. Food's Best Friend was a lot easier, except that Heinz Ketchup tried to use it in the 70s, but they never trademarked it. So that was kind of an easy one because it was a little bit unique. Lucky Dog, there's 1,000,006 Lucky Dogs.
Yeah,
dog
sure,
food,
sure.
Dog toys, dog sure. Treats,
yep.
A very famous hot dog stand in New Orleans. So it's Lucky Dog Hot Sauce, and it's a subclass of a subclass, condiment
sure.
class,
sure.
subclass hot sauce. It's very, very specific to what I do. But there will never be another Lucky Dog hot sauce until they pry it out of my dead cold hands.
Right. So at that point, you know, at this point, you've got a brand that's trademarked. You've got some intellectual
Correct.
Property. That's an asset. You've got, you know, a recipe that's probably, presumably, to some degree, trade secret to you. It's unique. You've got you figured out your manufacturing and the economies of scale that go with going to an outsourced service like you signed up. You've really, you know, at that point, you really cobbled together some of the key pieces of the business. The tough part, though, even when you have all that, is creating the awareness, the marketing, the promotion, and also the distribution. How did you attack those things?
Well, and this goes hand in hand as well with the game itself, which is the food business. And, you know, I didn't start a hot sauce company. I started a food company. And a lot of sauce makers come to me for advice to this. Yeah, I've been in it for only a couple of years. And I'm not the know-it-all, end-all, be-all, but I've been through a couple of the battles so I can help some folks. And you're not starting, you know, a hot sauce company. You're starting a company. And mm-hmm. you're starting a company in a very, very tough business where the logistics and the dynamic is that the grocery stores hold all the cards. It's a big leverage game. They have the shelves. They have the customers. Who are you? You're some small nobody. So
right.
they're going to beat you up on the price. They're going to want the biggest margin. They're going to insist you work with their distributor or worse, a food broker and a distributor. By the time all those cuts get taken out of the pie, you're left with one bite of pie. And you're spending all the money to make the sauce and getting, you know, a nickel on every dollar that customers purchase. So I decided, well, if the game is rigged to some extent, then why not play a different game? So I looked at farmers markets. I had one in my neighborhood. I worked at that one for 6 months while I worked my day job before I went full-time. And I looked at the numbers, and they were pretty good. And I'm the retailer, and it serves a few purposes. Not only does it help pay the bills, which it absolutely does. That's my core business now. I do some wholesale. I'm in 3 countries now. I'm in 11 states, and I'm in about 60 stores in California. But in addition to paying the bills, I'm tabling sauce and demoing sauce. Now, that requires a health permit and a whole other set of fees, but that helps spread awareness. I'm now in the Bay Area of San Francisco. I'm in the North Bay, the South Bay, the East Bay, and on the Peninsula, which pretty much covers my entire region. During the on-season when there are 11 farmers markets that I'm in, that's 11 locations where a huge demographic of customers can come through and try my sauce. I'm
Yes.
also very into social media. I try to hype it up and do contests.
Well, before we get onto that, what you did by going to the farmers market, so you're retailing it in effect directly, and so instead
Correct.
Of you gave up on volume, I would guess, and picked up a lot on margin. You're controlling your product, you're controlling your destiny,
Correct.
And at some point when you have some leverage, you can really demonstrate sales. You'll probably be able to negotiate a better wholesale situation when you go to the big markets, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Listen, I want to touch on how you use your website and social media real quickly for just a couple minutes. Can you give us a couple more minutes after this break?
Absolutely.
All right, wonderful. Stick with us. Hey, give your website address really quickly.
It's LuckyDogHotSauce.com.
All right, right on. LuckyDogHotSauce.com. I'm in. I'm going to buy some for sure. And I hope you all out there in the audience give Scott a big vote of support and confidence as well and tries his hot sauce. Sounds amazing. We're going to be right back after this break. Scott, we're going to talk about how you use the internet to help market and promote. And then we're going to go to another guest who's got another great story. Stick with us on Startup Nation Radio.
It's Startup Nation on WJR.
Easy to follow instructions on achieving your dream.
By taking action now.
Here's Jeff Sloan.
All right, welcome back to Startup Nation Radio. Hey, speaking of taking action now, well, boy, Scott Zollkind sure is doing that. Scott, thanks for giving us so much time. I know you got to get back to your booth at the farmer's market. We want to first tell me this. Is this a full-time thing for you now?
This is a full-time thing for me now.
Lucky Dog Hot Sauce, that's it. You're going to grow to become a broader food company, I presume. That's the long-term goal beyond just the one product?
Well, nobody hopes to become poor and small, so
there you go.
I'm certainly shooting for bigger and better. I'm definitely expanding the product line. I've got a new sauce coming out in March that I'm debuting at the Albuquerque Fire Food and Barbecue Festival. It's a terrific mustard chipotle that's unlike anything on the market, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Love it. There you go. Listen, your mind is active, Scott. you are working it. I'll tell you what, I love it. Listen, to make a business go, we always say you got to work hard and think smart. And if you work hard and think smart and you get a good little bit of good luck on your side, and frankly, we even think that the harder you work and the smarter you work, the luckier you get. But you're really making it go, and we can see. Listen, in our engineering booth in there, our great engineer Rich Lazinski said, "Hey, I love this guy." And you know what? It comes across. You're really on top of your game, and we can see why. Your success story, and a winner of a Startup Nation Home-Based 100 contest with the highest vote getter in the contest. All right, listen.
Crazy.
Couple minutes here, and then we got to get on to our next guest. How are you using the internet, website, and social media? Just in a nutshell, kind of sum it up for us. How's that working for you, and how important is it to the equation?
So it's working really well. I think it's the face of my brand to people who can't actually come see me at the farmers markets. I enter some competitions. I actually just won another Golden Chili last night in Texas, first place for the hot category, which I'm pretty excited about. I've won a lot for mild. This is my first big win for hot. So that tends to get tweeted and posted and Facebooked and YouTubed, and people find out about the sauce that way. That's one way the internet helps. And that's a kind of a low budget marketing aspect is, you know, winning awards are great. I'm very competitive. I have an older brother. I love to win. But I also love the publicity that comes with them, and that's really why I do it. If you're not taking advantage of a competition that you win, like Startup Nation's Top 100, if you're not posting it and tweeting it and sharing it, then there's no point in entering it. Otherwise, it's just for ego, and that doesn't help sell any hot sauce. But when it comes down to using Facebook and things like that, I do have a company page on Facebook. It's facebook.com/lucky.hotsauce. I am active on Twitter @LuckyDogHot and also on Instagram, LuckyDogHotSauce. I like taking customers behind the scenes a little bit. I see a lot of companies, and over the years I've seen companies, they take pictures of their own thing every single day. Here's a picture of my product. Here's a picture of my product. Here's a picture of my product. And it becomes white noise to me, the consumer. So I try and do something a little different. I go to my market neighbors, and I usually try to feature a different product at my farmer's market every week to help people see that, hey, this is a big community of growers and farmers and fresh produce and juices and coffee and whoever else is out there. Because when I support the community, I find the community supports me. So social media to me is not only a way to hit a national audience with a personalized message of this is who I am and this is what I'm a part of. It's also a great way to network with other brands and other places and to kind of build that community aspect in an online manner. So
it's all about engagement, right, Scott?
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's amazing. Boy, you are on your game. I know we're going to be reading and hearing about you. Hey, you're going to be on the cover of Wall Street Journal one day, and you made it with hot sauce. I love it. Scott, congratulations. You're a great representative of the Startup Nation Homebase 100 contest, and go get it, man.
Hey, thanks very much for hosting, and thanks very much for giving me some time today. I really appreciate it. I enjoyed the talk.
All right, wonderful. Thanks. Well, great story. You can see, no surprise there, why that guy's a success. That's for sure. That's for sure. Success doesn't come easy. He is on top of his game, and you should be too. Listen, he had a dream to have a business of his own. He did it with hot sauce. You can do it too. Well, moving right on to Rochelle Wetzel, you've done the same kind of thing. You had a need, an acute need, that inspired you to start a business of your own. You went on to not only be a Homebase 100 contest winner as well, but hey, you've got a successful business at your fingertips now. You got to be feeling good about what you're achieving. Welcome to Startup Nation Radio.
Thank you for having me.
So, Rochelle, you created a new business, Smiley Transportation, Rochelle Wetzel, Smiley Transportation, and you went after, I mean, you've created a new transportation service for kids. Instead of having them be bused to school, you created a new way to get them to school as a business. And again, there's a, you know, you took something that's out there. It's not the next biotech revolution. It's not that kind of a thing. It's doing something better than it's being done, finding a need. And you found it right because of your own circumstances, just like Scott did. So tell us, what does your business do and how did you come up with the idea?
Well, actually, I started this business out of necessity. I was a single mom with a special needs child and needed some extra income, you know, to get the bills paid. And I started taking a couple of kids to school that were not eligible to ride the bus. And one of my first customers was a single dad who was a paramedic and needed his son to get back and forth to school. Well, now that customer is my husband. And fast forward seven years later, we have grown this company to 8 passenger vans, 10 employees, and it's more than we could have even imagined.
And why would someone choose to pay you to get what they otherwise could get for free? What is it that you know inspires people to use your service and make them pay for it as opposed to getting it for free?
The main thing is safety. What they're paying for with us, my husband being a paramedic and myself being a mother of a special needs child, is making sure that these kids get door to door. We pick the children up at home. We take them to school. We drop them off. We have introduced a hands-free technology for automatic notification to the parents so they know their child has arrived safely at the school. And also in the evenings, whenever we pick them up from school, we take them straight to their home. We make sure they get in the door safely, and again, the hands-free technology notifies the parents that the child has been dropped off at home safely. So safety is the main thing. Whenever people say, well, why would I use your service when I can get the bus for free? Well, the bus, even if you use the bus, the children are still having to walk to a bus stop and wait. So there's traffic, there's predators, there's weather elements. You know, there's mischief with the kid that the kids can get into.
And the accountability, knowing where your child is at times, as you say. At all times. I mean, and if someone needed to reach you to ask a question, hey, did my son or daughter get on the bus, are they able to contact people in real time?
Absolutely.
See, there's a huge difference. Well, and clearly people are paying you for it. You've been in business how long?
This is our eighth year.
Yeah, eighth year. And you have now how many vans running?
We have eight vans. Yeah. When I started, we had three students, and now we're approaching over 200 students.
And are you guys doing this full time?
Yes, this is full time now.
And so the business is profitable, right?
Yes, sir.
It is, and it supports your family largely at this point?
Yes, it does. We have three children still at home, one a freshman in college. Our special needs daughter is a senior in high school this year, and then we have our last one who's a junior in high school this year. They all help us. They've watched us grow. And, yeah, it supports the whole family.
And in a local community like that, especially parents, you know, I mean, with the school being the kind of the cornerstone of the community, it's relatively easy, assuming you're doing a good job, to have word of mouth spread. I mean, obviously they're going to see your vans. They're going to see the branding on the van. They're going to know other kids that come to school that way. They're going to talk to other parents who use your service. So I bet that word of mouth, you know, doing a really good job, having one parent recommend it to another, was a really big part of getting this thing off the ground, right?
Absolutely. Word of mouth is huge. We also have a lot of parents who have used us for years. We have some, this is their sixth year. You know, we've actually had some students that we used to take to elementary school, and we take them to high school, and then we take their siblings. So our customers do stay on with us because of the good job we do. And they also recommend us to others. So we usually have about 75% of all students come back the next year.
And what is the cost?
We double about every year, too.
What is the cost? Just curious. You know, the cost of the service. Is it do you sign up as a subscription basis where you pay? You're not paying per ride, are you?
No, not per ride. It's basically a per week charge, and it really depends on if we're doing a morning service, an afternoon, a round trip, and the distance. But the fees can be anywhere from $45 to $100 a week. It just depends on what we're doing. Mm-hmm. We try to help the parents with before and after school activities as well. The main thing is we want to be there for these kids, for their safety, because all these parents are working parents, and they want to know that their kids are safe and also be able to have them participate in these before and after school activities as well.
Of course, what's more important than the well-being of your children?
I mean, absolutely.
What's more important than that? So that's great. Oh, and then the challenge for you, while you had the advantage of being in a local community and being able to draw upon word of mouth to get that initial momentum and to gain those customers, that probably offset a lot of marketing and promotional and advertising costs that you otherwise would have had to incur. But at some point, if you want to grow this business out beyond your community, you must. Well, first of all, is this a business you want to grow further?
Well, my husband and I always kid around. We would like to be the McDonald's of transportation.
So that's a lofty goal. If you're going to do that, obviously an expansion plan and a corresponding marketing plan to create the awareness in the other communities where you won't have that direct advantage, at least initially, of being able to count on that word of mouth, the power of word of mouth. How are you going to spread it to other communities? Have you thought about that?
Well, we have set ourselves up where we can either council or have licensees or franchises in other areas of the country for people who would like to start this but not have to go through all the, you know, the knockdowns that we went through whenever we first started. We definitely know what works and definitely what doesn't work. We do have some proprietary technologies and softwares and implementations that we can, you know, provide with those people. We do have a lot of school districts in the area that are begging to have us, but, you know, funding is always an issue. You can only purchase so many vans and hire so many employees your own.
Well, we're going to run to a break, Rochelle, but we're not done with you yet. There's more to the story, and we want to keep going right after this break. You can stick with us, can't you?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, right on, Rochelle. Stick with us. We're going to hear more from Rochelle. We're going to hear about some of the things that are unique and interesting to her operating her business today in her single market, and we're going to probe further on how she might grow this business out beyond that market. So stick with us on Startup Nation Radio.
It's Startup Nation on News Talk 760 WJR. Here's Jeff Sloan.
Okay, welcome back to Startup Nation Radio. Don't stop believing. That's right. Rochelle Wetzel, you created an amazing business for yourself. Did you ever stop believing?
No, definitely have not and will not.
Were there times, I mean, candidly speaking, were there times where you said, oh my God, what am I doing? I can't do this.
Well, no. I made the decision when my special needs child was born almost 18 years ago that no matter what, I was going to be home with her and be an entrepreneur. So I think necessity has been huge. My husband and I are great team members because he's the visionary and the big picture thinker, and I'm the worker bee. So he pushes me out of my comfort level, and then I go and get everything done.
did you have any formal background in business training, either of you?
Yes, I used to work corporate America. I used to travel the country and do trade shows and was in sales and internet software, all kinds of things. But with the birth of my child, I decided to work from home.
And it's working for you. I mean, it really is. You've got a profitable business. It's supporting your family. It's allowing you to be at home.
Absolutely.
It's working.
Absolutely. Really
working. It's incredible. And you've got big ambition. Clearly, you said you want to be the McDonald's of transportation. Wow, that's a big one. but it's great to have those lofty goals and shoot for them. I want to talk about, you know, in the last segment, we were touching on expansion plans. So, again, you're fortunate to have, you're in a community. You've got people talking to one another. You've got your vans driving around that community, doing a lot of branding and advertising for you. Parents see the vans pull up to the school. So they're, you know, they're asking, what's that? And that helps you create that awareness, which leads to customers. Clearly, you guys provide a great service, and that leads to customer retention. But as far as expansion and growth goes, you know, I asked the question, how are you going to get into the other markets? But really, as I thought about it, maybe even, and actually Paul Bologna, our producer, recommended that we touch on this, and it's really true. What about expanding your product line right in your own community? I mean, is there an extension, for example, like a daycare center that could be added onto this as a way to grow? I mean, you don't necessarily need to grow geographically to grow the bottom line of the business, and that's a strong point. So have you thought about that?
Well, actually, we have, and we've sort of done that, not with the daycare per se. We have a couple of areas that we have started in, and that is senior transportation, event shuttles, designated driver shuttles. We've had several people call us and ask us, you know, would you be interested in helping us out? So we have done a couple of parties where some people wanted to go to a winery, but they wanted to stay safe. So we drop them off at the winery. They stay for a few hours. We bring them home. We just did an event for Cotton Bowl. So
let me just interrupt you for 1 second. So what we're talking about there, I just want to make this clear, that is not really expanding your product line as I see it. I think that's more just taking what you do and expanding your market by applying it to other needs within the market, but the same service essentially. So instead of transporting kids, you're transporting others who need transportation for other reasons. Like you said, for example, people who go out and want to have a good time and take in a few and have a couple of drinks, whatever it may be, they don't want to drive after that. So you've provided your transportation service now to that market as well.
Exactly. And in the summertime, whenever school is out, we do summer school, we do summer camps, we do weekly shuttles to Six Flags and bowling alleys. We try to help out those working parents with the students that need the transportation, but the parents are working and they want them to be safe.
And then, you know, in terms of getting out beyond transportation, really truly expanding your product line or your service line, have you thought about doing things where you might, you know, for example, as Paul mentioned, having a daycare capability for parents who can't yet get home. So instead of taking the kids home, maybe they go to daycare after school for a little bit of time, and that's part of the business that you offer.
Yes, we definitely have thought about, you know, a facility where we could, for the parents that didn't want them to go home, we could take them to a central facility where they could have tutoring or they could take music lessons or karate lessons, dance. We have thought about that, but again, that would take, you know, some additional funding. If you happen to know of any angel investors, let me know.
Well, listen, I mean, if you've got a strong business plan for that, you're on a roll.
Absolutely, we do.
Well,
it would just take funding.
you know what? I'll tell you what. Let's you and I have a conversation about that offline.
Okay.
I think it's worth following up on. Absolutely. Let me just ask this. Actually, during the break, a caller called in and asked a question about liability. You know, that here you're dealing with people's children. You're dealing with vans. The accidents happen. I mean, you're putting those children's, their well-being and the care and handling of your drivers. How do you deal with, you know, the threat of liability in your business?
Well, the biggest thing, recently Uber mentioned that they had something for kids. And I the thought of someone who is not, has not had a federal background check or a drug test, or you don't know their driving record, driving my children, scared me to death. So anyone that drives for us, my husband makes them go through CPR first aid training. They have to have a federal fingerprint background check. They have to do an initial and random drug screens. They have to have a perfect driving record. We are commercially insured. We do have excellent insurance. My husband used to train people how to drive an ambulance, so he puts them through a driving course. We have cameras on every one of our vans. They can see outside, inside, audio, video, night vision. So anybody that drives for us has to be top of the line, and we have to know that these kids are going to be protected and safe.
Sure.
So, absolutely.
And in addition to the good training and scrutiny and all that goes with finding the right employees and making sure they're trained professionally to do their job, you guys take it further than that. I mean, you talk about in one of your interviews previously that I read about, you actually focus on creating a culture that permeates, as you put it, there's a culture that permeates everything we do and how we do our business. The employees are key to our future. And it's really, your employees largely are the touch point of your business to your clientele. I mean, you're back in your office. You're not driving each of those vans. Obviously, you can't.
Exactly.
And so you entrust not only the children's well-being to those drivers, but you entrust your business largely to those drivers and to your employees, as most do when they have a business and have it grow out beyond themselves. And so employees become really key. Tell us about some of the things you're doing then to create that culture among your employees that goes beyond the training, but of the specific skill set they're required to deploy in order to do their job, just the culture you're creating amongst the ranks there at your business.
Well, we're a big family. The nice thing is we used to have all of our drivers just keep their vans at their homes, because we outgrew our home, and now I'm standing in an office that we are in the middle of moving into, and so we have parking now, and it's been really nice because the drivers come in every morning and they check in, and we basically have a dispatch area, so the communication is key, and we have monthly meetings for our drivers. We do monthly awards, we do Christmas parties, we try to make sure that everybody knows that we're a big family, and we all have each other's back at all times.
And that really, I mean, it's not only makes for a better work environment every day, but it also really translates to more business, doesn't it? I mean, when a customer approaches a happy employee, an employee that takes pride in the business, I would imagine that those employees are doing some selling for you as well. If a parent comes
Absolutely.
Up and knocks on the window and says, "Hey, what do you guys do? I'm interested in what you're doing." That business is represented by your employees at that point.
Absolutely, and there's times that they come up and they volunteer, you know, to work events for us and hand out our cards. And I mean, we used to go door to door and hand out flyers. You know, the success of our business is means success for them as well. And, yeah, we're a big family. We all pitch in and we all help out.
Incredible. And when we call you a year from now and say, hey, come on back onto Startup Nation Radio, and you come on, you tell your story, what's the business going to look like at that point? You say a year from now, maybe 2 years from now? Paint the picture for us.
Well, I hopefully we'll have that large facility by then.
Okay.
And we definitely have our numbers that, you know, our goals that we have to reach. We have a certain percentage that we want to get to. I do see our fleet increasing by at least 4 more vans in the next 2 years. Usually we do about 2 additional vans each year.
And you mentioned franchising. Just if there are people out there that would love to take the formula you've created so successfully in your market and expand it into their market and maybe have a business like that for themselves, is that possible?
Yes, we're set up for licensees, consulting, and franchises as well.
Right on. Love it. Hey, listen, great, great, big congratulations. You're a Startup Nation Homebase 100 winner, and more than that, you're just a winner at business in general, and I'm sure life too. Thanks so much, Rochelle, for being on the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Best of luck. And we are going to make that call back to her in a year, and I have a feeling we're going to hear some good stuff. It's a great success story, as was Scott Zalkind's success story. Thanks for joining us on this edition of Startup Nation Radio. We'll be back again next week with more tips and tricks on how you can create your dream business.